Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 6th canto, 16th chapter, verses 1 through 4. And the 4th verse is the one that has a purport. So that's the one. That is the one we'll chant, and then I'll read the translation and the purport. So I'll just read the first three texts. Shri Badaranayaruvacha Ata Deva Rishi Rajan Samparitam Nripatmajam Darshayit Veti Ho Vacha Jatinam Anushochatam. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, my dear King Parikit, by his mystic power, the great sage Narada brought the dead son into the vision of all the lamenting relatives and then spoke as follows. Text 2. Shri Naraduvacha Jivatman Pashabhadram Te Mataram Pitaram Chate Suhrido Bandavas Tapta Shuchatvat Kritaya Brisham. Shri Narad Muni said, O living entity, all good fortune unto you. Just see your father and mother. All your friends and relatives are overwhelmed with grief because of your passing away. Text 3. Kalevaram swamavishya sheshamaya suridvritaha bunkshva bogan prichi pratan Adishta Nirpasanam. Because you died untimely, the balance of your lifetime still remains. Therefore, you may re-enter your body and enjoy the remainder of your life, surrounded by your friends and relatives. Accept the royal throne and all the opulences given by your father. Text number 4. I'll do word for word, and then we'll do the whole line. Jiva uvacha kasmin janmani ami mayam pitaro mataro bhavan karmabir brahmyamanasya deva Tiryan Nri Yonishu Jiva Uvacha Kasmin Janmani Ami Mayam Pitaro Mataro Bhavan Karmabir Brahma Yamanasya Deva Tiryan Nri Yonishu Jiva Uvacha, the living entity said, Kasmin, in which, Janmani, birth, Ami, all those, Mayam, to me, Pitara, fathers, Matara, mothers, Abhavan, were, Karmabi, by the results of fruit of action. Brahmanasya, who am wandering. Devatiryak, of the demigods and the lower animals. Nri, and of the human species. Yonishu, in the wombs. Translation. By the mystic power of Narada Muni, the living entity re-entered his dead body for a short time and spoke in reply to Narada Muni's request. He said, according to the results of my fruitive activities, I, the living being, transmigrate from one body to another, sometimes going to the species of the demigods, sometimes to the species of the lower animals, and sometimes among the vegetables, and sometimes to the human species. Therefore, in which birth were these my mother and father? No one is actually my mother and father. How can I accept these two people as my parents? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Here it is made clear that the living being enters a material body that is like a machine created by the five gross elements of material nature: earth, water, fire, air, and sky, and the three subtle elements: mind, intelligence, and ego. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, there are two separate identities called the inferior and the superior natures, which both belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to the results of a living entity's fruitive activities, actions, he is forced to enter the material elements in different types of bodies. This time, the living entity was supposed to have been the son of Maharaj Chitraketu and Queen Kritadyuti, because according to the laws of nature, he had entered a body made by the king and queen. Actually, however, he was not their son. The living entity is the son of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and because he wants to enjoy this material world, the Supreme Lord gives him a chance to enter various bodies. The living entity has no true relationship with the material body he gets from his material father and mother. He is a part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, but he is allowed to go through different bodies. The body created by the so-called father and mother actually has nothing to do with its so-called creators. Therefore, the living entity flatly denied that Maharaj Chitraketu and his wife were his father and mother. So this is a very nice verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the spotless Purana, consisting of 18,000 verses, and every one of the verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam is actually aimed at the highest good of the living entity. In this material world, we don't really know what our highest good is. We've come into this material world, and we've been living here since time immemorial, anadi karma phale. So actually, the fruit of our activities within this material world has been aggregating or accruing over time. So suffice it to say, we actually have a very heavy burden. And with that burden, we have no idea. We are in deluded consciousness. It explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says the living entities are born into delusion. So we're actually born in the mode of ignorance. We are born in the lower modes of material nature because we don't know our true identity. And the people that we are born, if we're in the human form, the people that we're born from, most likely or under most circumstances, they also don't know who they are. So in the beginning, the living entity is so helpless. He is in the womb. He stays in there for 9 months. He comes out, and then he is taken care of by a father, a mother, and so many relatives. But if those people don't really know who they are, then he starts becoming conditioned by the laws of material nature. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the laws of material nature are very stringent, and no one can actually cross over those laws of material nature. The only way you can cross over the laws of material nature is by getting information about a higher nature. So that is what's being explained here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is actually the torchlight of knowledge, which is actually shining light upon the subject of spiritual life, it will actually give us a true understanding of who we are, how we came into this material world, how we've contacted the material miseries that we're all so much affiliated with, and how we can get out of those miseries. So that's what the Srimad Bhagavatam is doing. It is helping us step by step get out of the miseries of this material world. And at the same time, it is introducing us to the positive activities of spiritual life. Because actually we are all persons. That is why we are persons now. Well, actually, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that there's never a time when we weren't existing. We've been here since time immemorial, but we just don't know. We've forgotten our birth. Our nature is to forget. Our nature is not to remember. Just like Arjuna on the Battle of Kurukshetra, he wasn't remembering. Krishna told him that he'd spoken this Bhagavad Gita to him millions of years ago. But he said, the difference between you and me is that I remember all my past activities, whereas you do not. So we cannot even remember what we did 5 minutes ago, 10 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago, yesterday. We just don't know what we're doing. So we're actually helplessly encaged within material body. That's the gross covering. And then there's subtle covering that's also there. So with all these coverings, we're actually in a very helpless situation. So actually, the state of Krishna consciousness means that the living entity starts to come to an understanding that I am in a very difficult situation. I am suffering very much. I don't know why I'm suffering, but I know that I'm suffering. So actually, a candidate for Krishna consciousness is someone who's giving up his desire to enjoy in the material world. God is all good. God is all kind. God will give us what we want. That's what independence means. We are not forced to do anything. Krishna didn't force us to come to this material world. He allowed us to come here. And we've been trying it out for so long that at some point we should come to the decision that it's no longer a good proposal to stay here. So that is when someone actually becomes a little bit qualified to understand Krishna consciousness. Other than that, we don't really have any qualification. Because we are implicated in all the action, all the laws of karma, action and reaction. We're just accruing. Actually, someone without a spiritual master, someone who's not on the right path, everything they are doing is leading to the lower modes of nature. There's no way to do the... Actually, Prabhupada said that the whole material mask is inauspicious. There's nothing really good in this material world. Someone will say, he's a real do-gooder. There's good and there's bad, but those are relative terms. In the spiritual sense, there is nothing good in the material world. Because it is Mrityuloka. It is the place of death. It is the place that actually stops us from our eternal relationship with God. So the way to come out of that is to be finished with it. If we are not finished with material life, then we'll never be able to understand spiritual life. Because we can never become desireless. The goal of Krishna consciousness is to transfer our desires from material desires to spiritual desires. Spiritual desires means desiring what God wants. Because we are all part and parcel of God. That means if we can learn who God is and understand what He wants and do what He wants, then we can become happy. The reason we are not happy in this material world is because we're not doing what God wants. So helping ourselves means putting ourselves in a situation to let God help us. So God is so kind that He says whenever there's a decrease, yada yada hi dharmasya, glani or bhavati bharata, whenever there's a decline of religion and a predominant rise of irreligion, then He comes Himself. And either God comes Himself or He sends His bona fide representative or His associates to help the living entity. Because God is actually very kind. God wants us to be in the spiritual world with Him. It is just that we don't know. It says in the Bhagavatam in the 8th canto that even before we start offering prayers, the Lord is trying to deliver us. So Krishna is so kind that He actually comes to this material world with us. He never leaves us alone. Even though we don't remember Him as Super Soul, as the friend, He comes with us. So as our friend, He is always trying to encourage us. He is always trying to get us to do the right thing. He is always trying to guide us to the right path and the right way. But because of our causeless unwillingness to serve and our causeless desire to enjoy separately from Krishna, we don't do the right thing. So that in this Bhagavatam verse is trying to wake us up to the fact that we really don't have a place in this material world. Our real place is at home with Krishna. Our real place is in the spiritual world with God. in one of the five relationships. In the spiritual world, God, He's engaged. He's the supreme enjoyer. He's Adi Purusha. He's the original enjoyer. In this material world, we are all the enjoyed. We are Prakriti. And Krishna, He is Purusha. But in this material world, whether one is a man or a woman, they come in with the mood of enjoyment. We all come in with that mood of enjoyment. And with that mood of enjoyment, we keep getting kicked in the face. We just keep getting kicked over and over again, you see. So when we want to stop the kicking, then we may go to someone. We may try to get some higher knowledge. And if we're very fortunate, we may come in contact with either God or God's representative. In this case, we've come in contact with God's representative in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is actually giving us the direction how to get out of this miserable condition in the material world. So if we take the medicine, Srila Prabhupada said, if you go to a doctor, and providing he's a bona fide doctor, and he gives you the right medicine, you don't even have to know what the ingredients in the medicine is. All you have to do is take the prescription from the doctor. And if you take that prescription, then you will get cured. So that's the idea. Srila Prabhupada, he's the doctor. He is the doctor that has come from Krishna, and he's giving us the medicine. So if we just take the medicine in the doses prescribed by the doctor, we don't even have to know. Prabhupada said the Srimad Bhagavatam is there for someone who wants philosophy. We are not a sentimental organization. We are not a sentimental group. We are actually based on very sound philosophy. But Prabhupada said, even if you can't read, if you can just chant Hare Krishna, all the philosophy is actually in the holy name. So our philosophy is very high. It is very complete, just like God is complete. Om Purnam Adahak Purnam Idam. So Krishna, He is complete. And although He is complete, all the units that have emanated from the complete whole are also complete in themselves. So we are also complete, but our incompleteness is being experienced due to incomplete knowledge. In the material world, we have a poor fund of knowledge. We don't have the right knowledge. We don't have the right source. So we have to get to the right source. If we can get to the right source and drink and fill ourselves up with the nectar of the knowledge of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, then we can cure all of our material miseries immediately. We can completely finish all our material miseries. Because the miseries within this material world, they are only due to contact with the senses. They arise out of sense perception. We only perceive the miseries. But if we take shelter of Krishna's holy name, if we take shelter of Krishna's instructions, and if we take shelter of Krishna's bona fide representatives, then we go deeper. We go below the miseries. We go beyond the miseries. And we enter into a transcendental state, you see. And it says in the Bhagavad Gita that a transcendentalist, although he's walking, although he's moving, although he's seeing, although he's speaking, although he's doing so many things, he's never really identifying with the body, you see. So that's the consciousness. Or Prabhupada said, like a man who goes and gets drunk, if he goes out and drinks and gets very, very intoxicated, he forgets that he has a shirt and pants on. He forgets about his shirt and pants. So that's Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada set this program up so that we can immerse ourselves in intense bhakti yoga. And intense bhakti yoga is the medicine that takes us out of the bodily concept of life. And it's only by getting out of the bodily concept of life that we can get into the spiritual concept of life. You see, we have to replace it with something. A taste has to be there. Ruchi is taste. So you have to have some taste. So if you don't have taste for the spiritual thing, then you will have taste for the material thing. So we have to replace our taste for the material thing with our taste for the spiritual thing. So Srila Prabhupada gave us a perfect process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti for intense bhakti yoga, engaging our senses all of the time. There's 9 processes of bhakti yoga. And as long as we're engaged in one of those 9 processes of bhakti yoga under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, then we will be extricating ourselves from the material world. And as Srila Prabhupada said, just as you take a meal and as you eat the meal you feel full, the same way Krishna consciousness is a science. It's not sentiment. So because it's a science, if we do it properly, we will get the result. Prabhupada said, if we're not feeling jolly, if we're not feeling happy, if we're not feeling in bliss in Krishna consciousness, we must be doing something wrong. Because the process in itself is very dynamic. The process is very powerful. The process that Srila Prabhupada gave us, it's a perfect process. Hare Krishna. But we just have to apply ourselves. So really, we have to look at the application. If we're not applying ourselves properly to the process of Krishna consciousness, then we may not get the result. But just as children, a lot of times in an irresponsible way, they blame their parents for what's going wrong. So the same way in Krishna consciousness, in the early stages, we may be blaming the process. We may not be looking in. But it says that we have to become introspective sages. We have to actually look in. We have to go farther. We have to go deeper. We have to want more. It's how much do we want it. It's all based on what we want. Krishna is the self-sufficient philosopher who's been awarding everyone's desires since time immemorial. He's never not awarded somebody the result of what they want. So we simply have to go inside and figure out and look at ourselves and cleanse what we want. So that's the process of bhakti yoga. The process of bhakti yoga is a cleansing process. One time Srila Prabhupada said that we're actually it's like cleaning coal. When he was talking about his disciples, he said it's like cleaning coal. Our hearts are so dirty. Our hearts are so contaminated. It's not that we just have a few specks of dust on our heart. We have like big cakes of coal. Like coal is a very dark black substance. So we have a lot of work to do. But that work is very nice. A devotee likes to work. A devotee wants to work. But he works as he's obligated. And one who works as he's obligated is in the true is a true mystic and he's in the renounced order of life. So real sannyas means to give up the desire for this material world. That's what sannyas means. It doesn't mean somebody simply changes his cloth or gets a danda and walks around. No. Sannyas is actually a stage of life. One takes sannyas out of humility. Humility means I'm not this body. Humility means I'm a servant of Krishna. Humility means I want to serve everyone. So the bigger in the material world, everyone wants to be served. That's why we came here. We all came here to be served, to try our hand at being God. But that's not working very good. Now we need to try our hand at being a servant of Krishna. And Krishna says, one who says he's my devotee, he's actually not my devotee. But one who says he's a devotee of my devotee, then that's my real devotee. So a real devotee tries to become a devotee of a devotee. He serves the devotees. And by serving devotees, he's serving Krishna. And to please the devotee, Krishna says he's more pleased when you please the devotee than you please him himself. So that's the process of becoming spiritual. It's a society. It's a culture. Krishna consciousness is a very deep culture. It's not sentiment. So if we culture Krishna consciousness properly, if we cultivate it properly, and we engage in the process of Krishna consciousness very scientifically, we will get the result. The result will be there. It's not that God doesn't want us to see him, you see. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati used to say, don't try to see God, but work in such a way that God sees you. You see, he said, just like someone goes out to war and he's just a little farm boy from the country, but he goes out and he fights in the field, in the battlefield. And when he goes out, he does a little something that he normally wouldn't do. He performs some heroics. And because of that heroics, he becomes known and he becomes a national hero just by doing his duty. So we have to be quiet professionals. A devotee is not looking for profit, adoration, or distinction. A devotee actually eschews those things. A devotee actually takes the limelight off himself. A devotee is not like when we read Srila Prabhupada's books, most people don't even know who the author is. You never get the idea that you're meeting the author when you read Srila Prabhupada's books. Why? Because he's a pure devotee and everything in his books is dedicated to pushing Krishna forward. He's always pushing Krishna forward. He's not pushing himself forward. That's the real devotee. The real devotee is pushing everyone else forward. He has no desire himself to be honored. You see, he doesn't want to be served. He doesn't want to be honored. He doesn't want a big position. He doesn't want titles. He doesn't want any of those things because he is too absorbed in love of God. He is so absorbed in serving his master and in serving the person that he loves that he really can't all those other things are very small considerations. They're not very important to a devotee. It says that a devotee considers the position of Lord Brahma to be no more significant than a little ant. Now, Lord Brahma, he created this whole material universe. It doesn't mean a devotee may not respect that Lord Brahma, but he's not in awe and veneration of Lord Brahma's position. So that is a devotee. He just wants to be a servant. Prabhupada said, a brahmachari, he goes out, he just wants service all day, maybe get a little prasadam, and then get a little place to sleep. And then he serves the next day. That's all he's looking for. And he's chanting his rounds, he's getting up, he's going to the morning program, he's doing whatever service is allotted to him, and he's very happy. That's Krishna consciousness. It's a process of bliss. It's Kevala Anandakanda. One nice story, one devotee, a famous devotee in ISKCON, Jayananda, he was famous for being a servant, very famous, never wanted to be eulogized. So one time one devotee was coming to the temple in San Francisco. He ended up being a devotee, but in the beginning he was just coming as a guest. So he came and he went to the temple, and in the back of the temple he saw this person in the back of the temple, and he was putting all the garbage in the dumpster. And so he didn't know where the layout of the temple, so he went up and he talked to this devotee. And as he was talking to him, he asked him a few questions and trying to find a few things about what was going on. And when he met Jayananda Prabhu, he was so ecstatic and he was so Krishna conscious that he was like, the person that was coming in was bewildered. And then he thought to himself, he said, if the garbage man knows this much about Krishna and he's so enthusiastic, what must the other devotees in the temple be like? So he thought that, and Jayananda actually said that he had a desire to be a garbage man for Krishna. Now that's inconceivable. He came from a very wealthy family. He was a very smart, intelligent person. He knew every street in San Francisco. He had a photogenic memory. Very brilliant person. But still, he wanted to become a garbage man for Krishna. You see, that service, his service attitude was unparalleled. He had no false ego. He had no desire for profit, adoration, or distinction. He couldn't feel that. I said a devotee is prideless. So that's what Krishna consciousness is. We're trying to reach that stage. We're not just there. We can't just say we're there, or we can't just tell one another we're there. We can't just dub one another as we're there. We have to get there. You see, so that's the process. That's the process of Krishna consciousness that we've all embarked upon. And there's no shortcut. You see, Prabhupada always said, God is not cheap. We always say, can you show me God? But Prabhupada said, what's the qualification to see God? Do you really have the qualification? Even if I show you God, can you see him? No. So we have to qualify ourselves. That's the process that we're in. We're in the process of qualification. We're in the probationary period. We're still on probation. We haven't graduated yet. Prabhupada even said initiation. That doesn't mean we've finished. You don't get initiated or a Brahmin thread and then you think, I'm a qualified Brahmin. When Srila Prabhupada came to this to America, he was giving people Brahmin's threads. He was installing deities in days. But we weren't qualified Brahmins. He was just doing that because it was an emergency situation. He was in an emergency situation, you can do things that you don't normally do. So it's not that we were qualified Brahmins automatically just by getting a Brahmin thread. No, you can go out here in the village here and buy a little two-pice Brahmin thread. That's really easy to do. You can go buy so many things to make yourself look like a spiritualist. But real spiritual means we have to be surrendered to the process of Krishna consciousness. We have to take Krishna consciousness seriously and understand that God isn't just going to reveal himself to us overnight. We should be prepared to do whatever it takes in order to see Krishna. That's what helping oneself means. That's what it means. We have to be prepared for the long haul. The long haul means that we'll do it over and over again. Srila Prabhupada said it's like wearing down a rock. If water keeps wearing on a rock, eventually the rock becomes worn away. So that's what we're doing. Over and over again, we're performing the repetition of bhakti yoga, but we're putting our essence into it. We're putting our bhakti into it. We're putting our love into it. We're not just following rules and regulations to follow, rules and regulations, but we're doing it with bhakti. That's what bhakti yoga means. And as we offer our service, we can't even offer service to Krishna. The bona fide spiritual master, he takes our service and he gives it to Krishna. We offer it to Srila Prabhupada. And if we offer it to Prabhupada and he gives it, he decides to give it to Krishna, then it'll get to Krishna. But we have no way to approach Krishna. That's the way Krishna set it up. We can't go directly to God. Sometimes people say, I don't really like this. I just like to do it my own way. I just want to go to God myself. I want to have my own personal relationship with God. Well, the thing is, God gets to decide how it's done. So he gets to tell us how to do it, you see. And he says, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshyanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshinaha. He says you have to approach a tattva darshinaha. Tattva means truth, and darshina means one who has seen the truth. You see, if you approach a tattva darshi, then he has already seen the truth. Srila Prabhupada is a tattva darshi. He has seen the truth. He's with Krishna at all times. He's sakshad hari. He is with Krishna. That's what we sing in the morning to Srila Prabhupada. He's with Krishna at all times. Therefore, he is very dear to Krishna. Prabhupada said he is Krishna's dog. He said, I am a very big dog, but I am Krishna's dog. So the Guru, the Mahabhagwat, he is Krishna's dog. He is the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. Therefore, his name is Thakur. He is no different than God, because everything that he does is done for God. So that's the process. That's the line. We are in a mercy line. Mercy comes from above. We don't say what is mercy. We try to get the mercy. So we are in a mercy line. This sampradaya that we are in, it is a mercy line. It means nothing but mercy. So we are trying to get the mercy. The Goswamis, they are also like that. They are always trying to get the mercy. They were never saying, oh, I have seen Krishna. Oh, now I am with Krishna. I am dancing with... No, they are always in anxiety. Where is Krishna? They are always anxiety. They were in separation. Vipralamba seva. They are always in separation from Krishna. So the more we advance in Krishna consciousness, the more we advance in our understanding of devotional service, the more we'll be qualified to render service to the Mahabhagwat, who is actually, the Mahabhagwat is actually the real liberator from birth and death. We can only go as high as the Guru goes. So we know Srila Prabhupada, Mahabhagwat, he is always with Krishna. So if we're going to take a chance, we might as well take a chance with Srila Prabhupada. We might as well take a chance on him saving us. We might as well take a chance, because we're risking everything anyway. Everything we do, every time we wake up in the morning, it's a risk. We don't know what's going to happen next. So it says, one famous philosopher, Goethe, he said that man only becomes important in his decisions. So when we make a decision, that's when we become important. Not beforehand and not afterhand. So we have to become important in our decisions. We have to make the right decisions. We have to pray to Krishna to help us to make the right decisions. If we don't pray to Krishna, we know that Maya is there. We know that the illusion is there. So we have to run after the spiritual master. We have to run after and catch on to his lotus feet and pray, please give me some shelter of your lotus feet. Otherwise, I have no hope. Otherwise, I have no chance of engaging in devotional service. I am a wretched, low-born, completely contaminated personality that took birth in this material world, and I've got no qualification to serve you. But by your mercy, if you can please not kick me away, then I may have a chance to serve you in some coming crore of my birth. Srila Prabhupada was praying like that, out of realized humility. The great devotees were praying like that, thinking that they don't have any qualification. When Srila Prabhupada came and was boarding, was docking on the Boston Harbor, he was praying like that. He didn't know why he was saying, although we know he knew, but he was feeling like that. Why has Krishna brought me here to this terrible place? The living entities that I'm, they're all surrounded and engulfed in the modes of passion and ignorance. How will I be able to do anything? Only if you make me dance will I be able to do something. So this year we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of ISKCON, you see. But ISKCON is not just the buildings. It's not just the temples. It's not the money and the titles and all those things. It's in the hearts of all the devotees that are in ISKCON. That's ISKCON, you see. ISKCON is in our heart, and because Prabhupada is in our heart. Prabhupada was asked, one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, are you in our heart? And Srila Prabhupada said, do you want me to be in your heart? If you want me in there, then I'm there. You see? So we have to ask. Ask and thou shall receive. If we want Srila Prabhupada in our heart, he's in our heart. You see? We have to be bold. We have to be courageous. We have to understand what we're engaged in here. It's a journey. You see, we're on a journey right now. Each one of us is on an individual journey back to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we have to take that journey very seriously because it's a razor's edge. A little inattention in this journey and we can cut ourselves and we can fall down from the process. So we know that there's 10 offenses in chanting the holy name. If we don't give up the offensive mentality, then we'll never make it. So there's seva aparad, there's guru aparad, there's the holy nam aparad. There's so many aparads. Not that we look at all that, we do positive service. But along with our positive service, we are very careful. We don't take things for granted. We don't just think, oh, I'm an advanced devotee. I'm just an advanced devotee because I say I'm an advanced devotee. Or my friend told me I'm a real advanced devotee. You see, we don't do that either. We don't just walk around. We glorify devotees, but we don't just walk around making things up. You see, we have to be careful that we don't just make things up. We have to be very careful that we see everything through the eyes of the sadhu and the shastra. The guru, sadhu, and shastra. We see everything through those eyes. Without that, we have no eyes. Shastra chaksusa. That is the shastra. Those are our eyes. Otherwise, we have no eyes. You see, our only eyes are being opened by the guru, by the sadhu, and by the shastra. That's how our eyes are opening. Other than that, our eyes are not open. So we have to be, as we carefully open our eyes, we have to look around. It's like a little baby when he first comes into the world or she comes into the world. They can't see very well. They can't see hardly anything. So, but day after day and week after week, they start to focus on different things. And then they can see more. And after a while, they can focus. So that's what we are like. We're like little babies coming into Krishna consciousness, trying to focus, trying to see. So we have to be very carefully that we corroborate everything with sadhu, guru, and shastra. And if we do that, then our progression in Krishna consciousness becomes very rapid. You see, because Krishna is wanting us to become advanced. Prabhupada said you can become Krishna conscious in a couple of seconds. You could become fully Krishna conscious in a couple of seconds. You see, it's not that it has to take many lifetimes. It's not that it has to take over and over and over. The process is there. It's what we want, what we put into it. What we put into the process of Krishna consciousness is what we'll get out of it. You see, so here we're in the best place in the universe, actually, no question about it. Being in this holy Sri Vrindavan Dham is the best place, bar none, in the whole universe to execute Krishna consciousness. So here, we should all be in anxiety. I'm here in a very special situation. One of the qualifications of an advanced devotee is that they never want to waste any time in Krishna consciousness. It's called avyartha kalatvam, that he realizes that time is a very big commodity, and time you cannot get back. Even if you're a billionaire, you cannot buy any time back. So our time is very valuable. So we have to use all of our time engaged in Krishna's service. So that should be our anxiety. We should think, am I doing this service given to me by my spiritual master right now? And what can I do next? Am I now engaged in Krishna consciousness? So that's how we get to the higher stages that we're all looking to get to. We're all looking to get to those higher stages. We all want to get the bhav. You know, like back in America, they have these festivals now where different people go, and they're kind of pseudo bhakti yoga festivals. And they go there to get their bhav on. So everyone asks one another, did you get your bhav on? What does that mean? How do you get your bhav on? The only way you really get your bhav on is by engaging, or even people go to a lot of seminars. Well, back in the day in Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada, we had a seminar every morning. It was called Mangalartik. And then right after Mangalartik was Tulsi Puja. And then after Tulsi Puja, we all chanted our rounds. That's the seminar. Prabhupada gave us a 24/7 seminar to engage in. There's no trick. There's no mental adjustment. There's nothing else we need to be Krishna conscious. Prabhupada gave us the perfect process for elevating ourselves to the topmost stage of Krishna consciousness and engaging in the pastimes of meeting Krishna face to face. Prabhupada said this program he's giving us, someday we'll actually be able to meet Krishna face to face. That's the process. There's no trick. You see, it's an open secret. Prabhupada never charged anything for the secret. He never, you know, he never did that. He just gave it to us and he said, go do it. You see, that's another thing. He just told us to do something and we went and did it. So if we give up our hesitation, like Arjuna had so much hesitation, he had so much doubt. So we have to give up our hesitation and we have to give up our doubt. That's what they're demons, the demon of doubt. We have to give up the demon of hesitation and the demon of doubt. And we do that by the association of devotees. By association of devotees, that instills in us the real conviction to engage in broadcasting Krishna consciousness all over the world. Faith is created. Everything is based on faith. It's a faith-based society. It's scientific faith, but it's faith nonetheless. So that faith is created by the association of devotees. If we associate with the pure devotee, then we get that faith. If we don't associate with pure devotees, we don't get that faith. There's many kinds of devotional service. There's many mixtures. Just as there's three modes of nature, there's also devotional service mixed with so many things. Jnana, karma, so many things can be mixed in devotional service. So we have to cut those out. Jnana Mishra Bhakti, Karma Mishra Bhakti, that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for Prema Bhakti. So Prema Bhakti doesn't come immediately, but we have to be associating with the devotees that are on the path of Prema Bhakti. It's a very specific activity. And if we do that, if we hear that and we get the ring of truth, then we become empowered. Srila Prabhupada was empowered to spread Krishna consciousness. He didn't do it on a whim. He didn't do it off the top of his head. He did it very scientifically. He took a lot of effort, we know that, before he came to America. He was very careful. He was very exacting. He didn't change anything that his spiritual master did. He said, that's my only qualification. I didn't change anything. I didn't add anything, and I didn't subtract anything. That's my only qualification. So that'll be our only qualification, or anyone's qualification, is we should be competing, just as Krishna and the cowherd boys are always, I'm not Krishna, the cowherd boys are always competing to play with Krishna, and it's a very competitive activity. We should be competing to get to Krishna. It's transcendental competition. So we should actually be competing with one another in a non-envious way to get to Krishna. That's what bhakti yoga is all about. That's what the program's all about. So Prabhupada set this temple up as a big, it's a glorious, triumphant expression of his hard work in bhakti yoga. That's what this whole temple is a manifestation of. It's nothing short of that. Nobody can take that away from Srila Prabhupada. He didn't do this. He didn't inherit it. He got it the old-fashioned way. He earned it, you see. He said, don't take away my privilege to struggle for Krishna. So Prabhupada saw he was the most advanced Mahabhagwat. He didn't have to do what he did. Really, he traveled all over the world. He never even stayed in the temples. He never even enjoyed the temples. All he did was build the temples and engage us in building them. And then he left. You see, that's all he did. So that's real opulence. He had all the opulence, but he didn't want to enjoy it for himself. He didn't have any desire. And even in the last days, Srila Prabhupada, what was he saying? I think I can travel again. Why? So he could take Guru Puja? No. He wasn't looking for adulation. He was looking to help the devotees. He was looking to strengthen the devotees. He loves all the devotees. Srila Prabhupada loves every one of us. That's the whole thing. He loves us more than we even understand. That's why he was going to travel. He was traveling because he loves us. His body was finished. You see, his body was finished. A doctor said, no person could be living in this body. It's materially impossible. But Srila Prabhupada had all mystic powers. So he was living in his body because Krishna let him live there. He wanted to be there. He wanted to spread the movement. And we see Srila Prabhupada translating his books even the last few days. Totally coherent. Totally cognizant. Every word coming out exacting and perfect. You see? That's yoga. That's the real yoga. Yogi nam api sarvesham madgantarantaratmana. The topmost of all yogis. So Srila Prabhupada, he's the topmost of all yogis, and he's allowing us to be in his party. If we're going to be allowed to be in Srila Prabhupada's party, that's the greatest position that we could ever want. That's the greatest position that we could ever want, to be in Srila Prabhupada's party. Just to play some little insignificant role in Srila Prabhupada's mission or Srila Prabhupada's party. That's what we have to aspire to. That's what bhakti yoga is. That's what the Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching us. Just to be aspiring. What are your aspirations? Sometimes these new age people, they ask everyone, what is your prayer? They say, well, what is your prayer? Well, our prayer has to be over and over again, let me be engaged life after lifetime in the service of Srila Prabhupada and his activities. If we do that, then we'll be glorious. So that's the position of Krishna consciousness. A devotee is never looking for position. He's looking for service. I'll stop there. Any questions or comments?
Everyone is attached to their children. So the child passed away. Narada Muni, by physical power, brought the child back to life. He said, well, why don't you continue? You didn't finish your lifetime with your parents, enjoy your parents, and enjoy the kingdom. So naturally, that's what everyone wants in this world. They want to see that their kids are staying healthy. They dedicate all their time and energy for their children. But this child passed away, so there was great suffering. And when the child was speaking to, because when the child speaks, people thought, wow, which parents are you? And I'm taking many, many births. And so it was a little bit bewildering to the parent when the child is speaking in such a way that this renunciation, that you're speaking about. But sometimes people may think that in Krishna consciousness we're insensitive. We're very philosophically inclined, we're big high-sounding philosophy, but we don't see the importance of family unit, or maybe we're not feeling enough compassion for the child who passed away and the suffering of the parents. Are we too aloof, or are we not enough concerned about social and family responsibilities and that kind of thing? Am I missing something?
No, you're not missing anything. There's different ways to look at it. One is that a devotee is very compassionate because he's actually compassionate for the soul. So just like there was one story of a woman coming to Srila Prabhupada's room, a devotee with her young daughter, and the daughter, I don't remember the age, but she had a terminal illness. And the lady was coming and she was very emotional with Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada stayed very grave, and he just said that we all die. So the mother was thinking that Prabhupada would be sensitive, he would be caring, she didn't know what, but he was going to be giving some kind of emotional, consolation in that sense. But in this sense, he knew that the person only had a month or two to live. So in that sense, Prabhupada was very stoic, and he was very grave. And he said, just prepare for death. So that's all. The guru cuts through everything. The guru is not there to win a popularity contest. But at the same time, devotees are not cruel. So Srila Prabhupada was always very careful and wanted the women taken care of. He wanted the children taken care of. He wanted old people taken care of. That's why he was going to establish Varnashram Dharma. So in Krishna consciousness, just like it says in Bhagavad Gita, that one may be a family man and have family and even be attached to them. And it's not that these are not natural objects of affection, but if they're not beneficial for Krishna consciousness, then one may have to give them up. So one has to judge in those circumstances. If somebody gets married, Srila Prabhupada was very adamant that if a man gets married to a woman, they should stay married for life. There's no question of divorce. And the man should take care of the wife the whole time. He wasn't into these, oh, it's temporary, so therefore we just stay together for a little while. But if somebody took sannyas, if someone entered the renounced order of life, then he was very strict. It wasn't that a sannyasi should be talking with women. It wasn't that a sannyasi would just, you know, sannyasi is a renounced person. So depending on the situation, depending on how we're situated within the material world, what our psychophysical makeup is, that's how we should act appropriately in the world. So we are not hard-hearted. Sometimes in the beginning, the devotees might have acted like that, and we did. But that's not what we're wanting. At the same time, in order to tone that down, it doesn't mean we change our philosophy and we just get sentimental and we don't really tell people the truth on what's really happening. So it all has to, for my opinion, has to be balanced out. We just have to balance our thing. We have to balance everything out. You know, and, you know, he wants, and Prabhupada said he was not creating an ideal society, I mean, an idol society, but an ideal society, where there are men and women of ideal character. And the devotees, they're developing the 26 qualities of a pure devotee. And as they develop good qualities, there'll be natural kindness. So we need to be very kind to people. We need to be very friendly. We need to be very sympathetic. And at the same time, we need to understand what our philosophy is so that we can actually elevate the soul. Because if we don't elevate the soul, then we just become some kind of a philanthropic organization or some kind of an organization that's just, you know, it just becomes a religion. It's not really a science anymore. And actually, Varnashram Dharma, and it's a science. It's not a religion. Yes? Right. Yeah, we can celebrate death because we know what happens at death, as opposed to, as I was reading yesterday, Prabhupada was saying actually that it's our duty while in the body to take care of the body. It's our duty while in the body to take care of the body. It's not that we just, because the body is a temple of God. The body is a temple of Krishna. So there's no harm in taking care of the body. It's not that we're not masochists. We don't just torture the body. Actually, in Bhagavad Gita explains that people do that. That's in the lower modes of nature. So sometimes people go out and do very torturous things to their body. But the body is actually Krishna's temple, and it needs to be used for service. So we have to take care of the body, but we don't do it. We do it up to a point. We do it to keep body and soul together. And depending on the station of life that you're in, family man, he may have to make some money for his... He got married and he's had a few kids. He has to take care of them. Otherwise, that's irresponsible. Brahmachari, he doesn't have to do that. So according to our station in life, we have our duties. There's duties that parallel one another on the material level and then on the spiritual level. And at the same time, we're practical. Hare Krishna.
So, because of your explanation, you mentioned that we are all in the professional state. So, it appears that, say, we have a certain class of people who are your professional state.
I didn't understand the last part.
Because of your explanation, you mentioned that we are all in a professional state.
Right. I still didn't understand. I don't understand the second part of the question, or the last few words. I understand you said that we're in the probational stage.
Yeah, I said the statement appears to indicate some class of people.
Class of people?
Yeah. I don't know if you have a comment to that.
You know what he's saying?
Certain class of people.
To?
We're in a probational stage. That's relegating a certain class of people.
Of devotees? Okay, yeah, well, yeah, there's three classes of devotees. There's the first class, second class, and third class. There's the Uttama Adhikari, the Madhyama Adhikari, and the Kanishta Adhikari. And there's actually even stages lower than that, Vaishnava Praya, or the shadow of a devotee. So typically when we enter Krishna consciousness, we're entering on the third class, you know, we're on the material, Kanishta Adhikari means a materialistic devotee. Can't really distinguish between demons and devotees. Doesn't really know so much. Sees the deity a little bit and believes, at least theoretically, that he's God. But can't really distinguish so much about different classes of devotees. So in the beginning, we're actually on the probationary stage until even a Madhyama Adhikari is somewhat under probation. A Madhyama Adhikari is the middle stage, of which there are many levels, but even a Madhyama Adhikari is a very advanced devotee. A Madhyama Adhikari, a true Madhyama Adhikari, is actually beyond anartha. Anartha means something that's unwanted. So a real Madhyama Adhikari has no anartas. He's beyond anartha nivritisya. He's gotten rid of all of his anartas. He doesn't see Krishna. He's Brahman realized, but he's a very advanced devotee. But he's not Bhagavan realized. Bhagavan realized is Uttama Adhikari, someone who actually realizes his constitutional position with Krishna. So there's many, many stages, but we should know, it says we should look and see what stage we are on. So that takes honesty. If we really want to see the stage that we're on, we have to be honest. We can't delude ourselves, because it says if you delude yourself, then you're a pretender, you see. So if you delude yourself, you can pretend, like Pandraka, he came out with some arms, saying that he was Vishnu, but he wasn't Vishnu. So there's so many pseudo, Prabhupada said, there's so many apasampradayas out there. You come to India, there's so many people every day that say they're God. God is being made every day in the street. What is your qualification for being God? So that's the thing, is we're in the probationary stage in the sense that we really, until we're fully free from the four defects of material nature, we're still on probation because we haven't completely alleviated all those things, all those vasanas from our hearts, you see. So it's not like we're just sadhana bhaktas and we're just all liberated. In one sense, Prabhupada says when we're engaging in Krishna consciousness, we're not on the material level. And the iron is in the fire, but it hasn't become fire yet. So that's the state. We're all on some level. So we have to look at that level. We have to be honest with ourselves. We can't delude ourselves or others. No use in pretending. Just be honest, because Krishna consciousness is based on honesty. Honesty is the best policy. You see, if we're not honest, then we cheat. Prabhupada said he never had to use the cheating procedure. Prabhupada never cheated. He never cheated anything. He never cheated anybody. that's one thing one devotee said they could tell when they were in the movement for a month or two. They said, I could tell that this person was never going to cheat me. I was very burned out. I was very, you know, disillusioned. But I could just tell Prabhupada would never cheat me. So Prabhupada would never cheat anybody. You see, because he's a Mahabhagwat. Why would he cheat anybody? Oh, sorry. So any other comments or questions? Is that okay? I think he says he has a story he wants to share. It's a little late.
Let's take 2 minutes.
2 minutes. Is 2 minutes okay?
It's hard to hear.
It's hard to hear. Yeah, if you can hear, talk loud, okay. Lee.
This became filled with devotees and they wanted to see him for the last second. This was a problem for the airport officials because there was no room for the passengers in the departure lounge. The official spotted Ravindra Swarup Prabhu and explained the situation to him and asked him, "Your people would kindly leave so that the persons who are in the plane can come in the departure lounge." Ravindra Prabhu said, "Okay." He spoke to a couple of devotees, but no one would leave. Then Rupa Ruga was Vijay Sandesi at the JPC, immediately got on the chair and said, "Attention all devotees, you have to leave the departure lounge now to make room for the incoming passengers." But no one moved. Everyone sat there and looked at him, except for one person, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada got up and started to walk out. Rupa Ruga said, no, not to Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada was so humble when he heard that devotees should leave, he got up to leave, even though no one gets there. This is a symptom of humility more humble than the predominance. In 1975, Srila Prabhupada was flying from Kenya to South Africa for the first time. And as it happened, the South African football team that had just played in Kenya was also on the plane. They had won the match and were in a rowdy mood. After the plane took off, the stewardess started serving drinks and these guys started getting high. Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada's secretary, was sitting next to Srila Prabhupada and he got disturbed. He thought, why should Srila Prabhupada be subjected to this? He called the stewardess and said, "This is non-smoking area, so please ask them to extinguish their cigarettes." The stewardess asked the football players to extinguish their cigarettes, which they did and she left. But since they were drunk, after a few minutes, they started again. This time, Pushti Krishna Maharaj got up to get heavy with these guys. Srila Prabhupada said, "Where are you going?" Pushti Krishna said, "Well, they are smoking, Srila Prabhupada." In deep voice, Srila Prabhupada said, "Sit down." Srila Prabhupada looked him in his eyes and said, "What is the difference between us and them if we cannot tolerate?"
Chai.
So, Amaniya Mahadeva was slowly at home, Bombay. At that time, Bombay Temple was a hole in the ground with a foundation. Prabhupada's room where at the back of the property where BBT building is now. Prabhupada wanted to get project moving, so after breakfast, Prasadam next morning, he had important meeting in his room with GBC. While the meeting was going on, the cleaning lady came up the stairs in the wooden bucket with straw and broom. She came to let me and looked through the door, which was slightly ajar, and saw Srila Prabhupada speaking to GBC men. So she couldn't go in, but he had to do her service because her one rupee salary fed her children. She needed it. Uncertain, she stood there. Meanwhile, Srila Prabhupada saw her and immediately said, "Now we have to stop. The cleaning lady has come. Everyone has his or her area of authority. And when it is cleaning lady's time to clean, she is the authority we have to leave." They all got up and left. So the Jagat Guru recognized the authority of that cleaning lady. Amanina Mahadeva. He gave all respect to others and did not desire any for himself. In this way, Kirtanya Sadhari was able to chant holy name of the Lord constantly. Srila Prabhupada was able to chant holy name of the Lord constantly. Srila Prabhupada's embodiment in the personification of words that many years before he had said was the formula of Krishna Prema and which he was spread all over.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada. Jai Haribol.